Welcome to Geopolitical Horizons, the podcast from thegeopolitics.com. So we'll continue with our series looking at the geopolitics of the different regions of the world. Today we want to look at South Asia, and like always we have Geopolity founder Adnan Khan with me to analyze South Asia. And then let's start with what are the key features of South Asia?
Okay, Yusuf. So when we're talking about South Asia, what are we exactly talking about? We're talking about the area from the Iran-Afghan border all the way to Burma, Myanmar. In the north are the mountains that run from the Hindu Kush, so the Himalayas, all the way to the Arabian Sea in the Indian Sea on one side, and then the Bay of Bengal on the other side. So many consider South Asia its own island because it's separated from Asia by mountains and jungles. So you actually, if we had a map, if we were to convert the mountains and the jungle, the north of the region into water, it's actually a separate area. The region has a quarter of the world's population, so that makes it important. And in the region, you have India, you have Pakistan, which are probably the two main players in the region. You then also have Bangladesh. Afghanistan sometimes is lumped into Central Asia. A lot of the times it's part of South Asia. You have Nepal. You have Bhutan, and you have Sri Lanka in the south of India. And then you also have the Maldives, which runs a small chain of islands from the south of India into the Indian Ocean. So this region, Yusuf, it wasn't one of the main world issues for a long time. What's made it an important region and why we should consider it a separate region is the Islamic revival in the region due to Kashmir and Afghanistan makes it important. You've obviously got the growing power of China. China shares a border with this particular region. And then obviously the entry of India and Pakistan as nuclear powers has made this region really, really important. So taking all of these together, these are the key features of the region.
I think the most significant thing about this region for me is the partition. I feel like you can't really talk about this region without actually discussing partition. It really has shaped the region, and it's been 75 years since then and it still weighs so heavily. Could you tell us a little bit more about this?
So probably a good way to look at this, Yusuf, is there was a marriage for a long time in this region. And then there was a divorce, and both parties have never got over the divorce. They accuse each other of the relationship. They accuse each other of historical events. And both are separate entities, Afghanistan and India, and they still view each other as competitors. Now, many historians, Yusuf, they now consider the way partition was done, how the idea came about, that it was wrong, it wasn't good for the region, it's created half the problems in the region. When partition happened, Muhammad Ali Jinnah said that what we got in terms of Pakistan was a moth-eaten Pakistan. What that meant was he wanted much more territory. And even the idea of partition, Yusuf, it was a decision the British Empire made right at the end. The British Empire actually didn't want to partition the region. Its strategic thinking was that the world is changing. It's after World War II. You've got the Soviet Union, you've got America. And for them, a united India was a good way to remain a influential nation. But what they found was the call to decolonize was growing. The British Empire was bankrupt. It couldn't fund it. And there was a worry that the Indian independence leaders, they didn't want to be part of the British Empire going forward. So in the end, what the British did was they believed the best way for them to maintain their influence was to partition the land. So a weak Pakistan would be linked to Britain. So Britain could have privileges in the base. And India, in some form or shape, would have some sort of relationship with it. So that's why, Yusuf, you know, the way partition was done, the way the economic resources were distributed, it created significant problems for Pakistan, which really remained, if some of them still even remain today. So naturally, you know, in your question, why does it weigh still heavily? It's because the repercussions are still with the people today.
You mentioned that this region, it has about a quarter of the world's population, so 2 billion people, nuclear weapons, there's resources there. You would expect that this region would be a lot more influential than it actually is. It just seems like most of its history is dominated by outside powers even today. What's the reason for this?
So Yusuf, when this region was united under a single power, you find it was a global juggernaut. So you find that India, combined India and China, for most of history have been the largest populated countries, and they were the most powerful countries in the world. So the British, when they came to India in the 1600s, they didn't come to a poor nation. They came to probably the richest nation in the world. They came to a nation where they couldn't imagine what they were looking at. They saw the Mughals, full of agriculture, full of resources. So you find when the region was united under a single power, it became a global power. And that's why the French, the British, the Germans, the Portuguese, Spanish, they all flocked to India. That was the place to go to, India and China in the past. What you also find, Yusuf, is whoever's ruled this region, they've not been imperial colonial. Because it's a continent in itself, you've never seen this region expand beyond it. So, you know, I mentioned the frontiers of this region go to Afghanistan, Persia. Why did they not go beyond? Because this region has never really been imperial. Why did the British come here? Why did the French come? Why did the Spanish come? Why did the Portuguese come? Because they were imperial. They were looking to colonize other regions. What you also find, Yusuf, unfortunately, is the regional nations keep getting involved in great power competition. So rather than act independently, what you find is they joined America in the Cold War. They joined America when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. And once again, you find Pakistan joined America when it invaded the region in 2001. You find India maintained a very close relationship with Russia when it was under the Soviet Union. So you find that rather than being independent, the countries, the constituent countries, have always worked with whoever the great power is. So definitely, Yusuf, there's a lot of latent potential. This region can be independent. It has nuclear weapons, has a large population, has plenty of resources. And the last time these resources were used was under the Mughals, who made the region into a global power.
It's often seen by the world that this region is a hotbed for Islamic radicalization. Could you tell us a little bit about the history of Islam in this region and why people take Islam as their identity?
So the reason why, Yusuf, is Islam has nearly a millennia-long history in this region. Islam really came to this region in the early part of Islam, in the early 700s. And Islam actually came in two waves. It came in the early 7th century. So this is where the Arabs from the Middle East, they expanded and they came to Sindh, the northern area. And that was the first wave of Islam coming to this region. And then the second wave is from Central Asia through Afghanistan, Islam came to this region. So you find that when the British came to this region, struggling with the people, they were faced with the Muslim people mainly. Although the Muslims were the largest populated segment of this region, what you find is they were the rulers. And they, Muslims have been ruling this region really since the 8th century onwards. So when the British came, they entered into a big struggle with the Mughals and then the Muslims afterwards. So that really, Muslims came to see this as a battle between Islam and non-Islam. What you also find is that as far as every Pakistani is concerned, Pakistan was created in the name of Islam. So the argument for partition goes that for long we lived with Hindus and we have a separate culture, we have different values. So we need our own nation where we can live under our values. So as far as many Pakistanis are concerned, Pakistan was created in the name of Islam. So this is the history, the heritage. So for them, this is a unique region and Islam is intertwined. We find then, Yusuf, when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan throughout the 1980s, it was jihad, it was an Islamic struggle to get rid of these godless communists. And then once again, when the US invaded in 2001, it was seen as a battle between the secular West and Islam. So whilst they call it radicalization, really the Muslims in South Asia, their view is Islam has been here for a millennium. It is a integral part of the region. It is the culture of the region. So that's why Islam is intertwined with this particular region. And that's why it's only natural many people in this region take Islam as their identity.
On top of the rise of Islam in this region, we're also seeing a rise of the Hindutva far-right identity within India. Could you tell us a little bit more about this?
So the Hindutva right-wing Hindu nationalism, it's not something new. It's actually been there since the early days of partition. When discussions of the British leaving India began, the main party historically was the Congress Party, and Muhammad Ali Jinnah was part of the Congress Party, and they fought a long struggle for Britain to leave so they could become independent. And the Congress view was is India should be for the Indians. So Indians are Muslims, are Hindu than lots of other people. They didn't see it as a Muslim-Hindu particular issue. However, what you find was there was a faction that was very loud. They saw India through a Hindu lens. So before Islam came, their view was Hindus lived there, Hindus have prospered here. Then the Arabs came along and they conquered us. So there's always been a right-wing Hindu view, but this was a minority, and it was actually a person from the right wing, Hindu right wing, assassinated Gandhi in the end. So it's always been there, but the Congress were the dominant party, they were the dominant faction, and they wanted to establish a nation on liberal lines, a secular nation. But India is full of Hindus and they want their Hindu culture to be part of their system. And over the years, because of corruption and economic mismanagement, Congress lost a lot of credibility, and the BJP, which is a coalition of Hindu right-wing groups, they emerged. So the current BJP, Narendra Modi, they are the party that's a coalition of right-wing Hindu party. So their view is very different to what historically evolved in India. They see India as a Hindu nation, and non-Hindu should be second-class citizens. And their reading of history is they were doing fine for millennia until the Arabs came along and Islam came along. So that's why they view the British as a positive thing, because the British took power from the Muslims. So they're very positive about the British occupation, whilst Britain really raped this particular country. So for them now, they want to return back to where they were historically, which is the Hindus are in power, and every other ethnicity and religion is subordinate to them.
So is the Hindutva far right claiming that the Muslims in the region, they're actually, are they ethnically Arab? Is that what they're saying?
That's a bit of a slur. But their main thing is you're foreigners. So the only way you're going to live here is you're going to be second-class citizens. That's how they view it. And they view very negatively the millennia period. They lived under Islamic rule. They were dot. You got to remember, Yusuf, the Hindus probably historically made up 80% of the population of India. Even when the Muslims were rulers, they were a minority ruling over majority Hindus. So it's more of a slur, but their view is you are foreigners. And I don't think that's necessarily a problem. I don't think that's historically incorrect. But yes, Arabs did come. And Muslims from Central Asia came and they settled and they made the region their own and they contributed towards the region. They didn't colonize the region like the British did. They didn't rape the region. When the British came, Yusuf, in the 1600s, I think by the 1750s, where Britain took over rule, India was 27% of the global economy. When the British left in 1947, they turned it into a poster child of poverty. India then became about 2% of the world economy. That's not what happened under successive Muslim rulers. What you find is the Muslim rulers settled. They took the region as their own and they contributed towards the region. They didn't take the resources for their own personal use. They didn't become imperial and take these resources abroad. They did the complete opposite to what the British did. So they obviously got their narrative and they're trying to push a particular version of history. But you find a lot of that history just doesn't stack up with the facts.
So Dan, are you saying that the Muslims in that region, they're not indigenous to that region?
Oh, okay. No, absolutely not. So yes, it was the Arabs that brought Islam originally. And then the second wave was brought by Muslims from Central Asia and Afghanistan. But what you find, Yusuf, is as the decades went by, the indigenous Hindus became Muslims over time. So it wasn't loads of people from other countries came and settled there and the settlements become entrenched. What you find was these people came, but then locals became Muslims. Locals embraced Islam. So the Mughal rulers, for example, they married local Rajput princesses. So their children and their wives were indigenous to the region. So no, whilst, yeah, Islam came from outside, but over time, the locals embraced Islam, they became Muslim. And that's why you could say Islam was really a local phenomenon in the end. So the people that are Muslims today, they're descendants of people that, you know, for generations that were born Muslim, born into Muslim families, and Islam has continued.
Okay. Now, obviously, when the partition happened, Britain lost its influence. Since then, you've found that there's been the US presence there. How's the US been able to maintain its influence in this region?
So, Yusuf, when partition happened, you know, Britain was bankrupt and America looked at this region and it looked at it through a Cold War lens. The Cold War was beginning and what America wanted is it wanted to create a containment line. So from Finland down to Turkey, from Turkey to Iran to South Asia, all the way around to the Philippines and Japan. So when America looked at this region, it wanted to make sure China and Central Asia, Russia, couldn't expand into this region. So when they looked at this region, they saw India, the most powerful country. They saw India, the largest country. And they wanted India to join the Western camp and be the bulwark against the expansion of communism. But what you find, Yusuf, is India's founders, people like Nehru, people like Gandhi, they were actually quite impressed with Russia, the Soviet Union. And they actually wanted to have very good relations with the Soviet Union. In fact, they didn't want to take sides. They wanted to have good relations with the West and Russia. They didn't want to take sides. So what you find, Yusuf, is America struggled to get India to join its side of the Cold War. So in the end, America had to do with, make do with Pakistan in the end. And the reason why they turned to Pakistan was when partition happened, most of the resources remained in mainland India. Pakistan got virtually nothing. And this caused an economic crisis straight away. So the original founders of Pakistan, the military rulers, they came to the conclusion that the quickest way for Pakistan to develop, the fastest way for it to develop economically, is it should join America in the Cold War. It should become the bulwark for America in the region. And all those resources and technology that will come to Pakistan will allow it to rapidly develop and stand up against India, against a much bigger India. So what you find, Yusuf, is since that time, successive Pakistani rulers, be they military or civilian, they've been pro-America. They see Pakistan's future as being aligned to America. And that's why the Soviet invasion, Pakistan aligned with America. You see the American invasion of the region in 2001, Pakistan sided with them. So despite the difficult relationship, you find Pakistan's stayed with them. From the 1990s, the relationship with India changed. The Soviet Union collapsed. India's aid and relationship came to an end with Russia. Russia was in a decade of chaos. That's when India then opened up the country, opened up to the free market, and American companies started coming over. And really, at that point, America finally achieved what it was trying to do for decades, which is to get India to join its side. But that's why today, India is a key country in the region to act as a bulwark against China. The Cold War finished. Soviet Union's gone, but great power competition is starting with China, and America views India as the bulwark against it. So Pakistan's rulers being vassal, you know, Pakistan being a vassal state for America, and now that the main political party in India, the BJP, wants to work with America, this is how America maintains its influence.
So what are US and India relations like today?
So the BJP, Yusuf, they like the fact that America sees India as a policeman in the region. They like the fact that America wants to pour money into India to stand up against China. However, India hasn't completely played ball. India actually has a very tense relationship with China. However, India wants to have good economic relations with China. And this is something that America doesn't like. It wants them to have antagonistic relations and it wants India to be on America's side. So what you're finding is despite there being good relations between India and America today, America's not completely happy. And again, like partition, India wants a bit of both worlds. It wants to trade with the West and wants to trade with the East. It doesn't see it in its interest. And what they show you is there's some level of independent thinking in India, which you don't get in, for example, Pakistan. And this goes back to people like Nehru and Gandhi. They had a bit of a view that we shouldn't take a side. That's not good for India. We should try and work with both sides. And that's still there, although there's a much closer foreign policy relationship now between India and the US.
So with India being considered as the main opposition to China, and they both share a border with each other, what's the relationship been like between these two nations and China in general with the region as a whole?
So the China-India relationship, Yusuf, is defined by an event in 1962. What happened was the borders of British India with China were never clearly defined. So when partition happened, India claimed a lot of the northern areas, you know, where Kashmir is, which was going into China. And this led to quite a bit of tension between China and India, and it eventually led to war in 1962. And India was brutally defeated, something it hasn't forgotten. So since that time, India and China have basically been enemies. So regularly, the northern areas, you find this tension. Even at the moment, technically, there's a standoff in the Himalayas between India and China. So America is trying to use this antagonistic relationship for its advantage. What America is saying to India is, we will supply you with weapons, we will arm you, we will develop you, and you stand up against China. And what India is doing is, yes, we have tensions, territorial tensions. However, we also have an economic relationship which we want to maintain as well. India is trying to balance this relationship with China whilst America wants to get a flare-up for it. So in many ways, Yusuf, relationship between India and China is tense. There's territorial dispute. There is, at the moment, both of the armies, Chinese and India, are standoff in the region. However, economic relationship is only blossoming. China supplies India with lots of equipment, consumer products. On the other side, India provides China with services, with agriculture as well. So you've got this antagonistic security relationship, but you've got this prosperous economic relationship.
One of the main issues in this region is Kashmir, the land dispute of Kashmir. Do you think this will ever be resolved? Where are we up to with this at this moment in time?
So the challenge, so Kashmir was an issue that broke off really straight away when partition happened. The British principle was the Muslim majority areas go to Pakistan and the majority Hindu areas go to India. Kashmir was unique in a way where the majority of the population was Muslim, but the leader was Hindu. So what happened was, is he wanted to keep his kingdom, which he realized he won't be able to keep because the majority were Muslim. So he cut a deal with India that if I join India, I can keep my kingdom. And India promised him that, but obviously they weren't able to deliver on it. And straight away, a war broke out, and there's been about three wars over Kashmir. The challenge you've got at the moment with Kashmir, Yusuf, is there's actually been lots of talks between representatives of both countries. Some closed doors, some open doors. Both countries' political elite, they're actually up for a compromise. They're actually up for either an independent state, but Pakistan and India have privileges, or the line of control, which the UN set, that becomes a permanent border. The problem both countries have is the people won't buy this. If the status quo currently becomes the permanent status quo, Pakistani people see it as a sellout. If India does that, the politicians won't be able to live it up with their people. So what you find is the people are on one side and the rulers are on the other side. And one of the reasons for this, Yusuf, is the rulers in both countries use the Kashmir issue to rally the people. So both sides want to show their people they're strong on the issue of Kashmir, that they're with the people's sentiments. But what you find is behind closed doors, they're up for negotiating and compromising on it. Kashmir is strategically important, Yusuf. Both the main river systems in Pakistan and India, the waterways come from Kashmir, from the Himalayas. So whoever controls the Kashmir, they control the key water source that goes into both countries.
And finally, Adnan, what are the long-term trends you see for this region?
So three trends, Yusuf. The population of this region is only growing. It's not getting any smaller. So I think, if I'm correct, Yusuf, the population is nearing 2 billion already, and it's only going up. And, you know, Bangladesh, India, and Pakistan are the largest populated countries in the world. Now, if the populations are going up, then jobs need to be created. The economy needs to be structured correctly. You need to house people. You need to educate them. There needs to be infrastructure. And this is something that's been sorely lacking in the region, and it causes tension. So that's the first thing. You know, increased population is going to lead to increased tension. The second issue is the political system in many of the countries are just in chaos. You look at Pakistan, political system in chaos. Half the time, the military's been in power. The leaders are more interested in siphoning of wealth. If you look at India, you've got a Hindu right-wing party in government, but what you find, corruption has always been a big problem. You see the same thing in Bangladesh. So if the populations are only growing and the political systems aren't stable, this doesn't paint a really, really good picture for the future. And probably the final trend to keep an eye on, Yusuf, is, you know, India is the size of a continent. And as much as India talks about one India, united India, really there are huge separatist movements in India. You've got the Sikhs, you've got the Naxalites, you've got the Christians, you've got the Muslims, you've got Kashmir. I think it is a serious question, Yusuf. Can India even stay together in the long run? And you find India's got no strategy on dealing with all these separatist issues. They just think if we throw the military at them, that will solve it. But with the Naxalites, which is in the center to the south of India, Yusuf, the Indian military has struggled in dealing with the militants there who want separatism. And that's what you find in India is, you know, with a Hindu right wing in power, they don't want to integrate these people. Their view with these, all these non-Hindus should be second-class citizens. So that doesn't bode well for India going forward. So Indian separatism, the growing population, and the political systems being on chaos, these are going to be the key trends in the foreseeable future for this region.
Thanks for your time today, Adnan. If you want to learn more about the issues we've raised today, please check out our website, www.thegeopolitics.com, all one word. You can also learn more on many other issues by accessing our website. You'll find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Yusuf. Thank you for listening.